Good afternoon, and welcome to our second town hall meeting. This is the second of five meetings to be held at 2 p.m. today and for the next three consecutive Sundays with candidate for D.C. City Council at Large, Michael D. Brown. I am your moderator, Kathleen Gomez, and I'm here to facilitate the conversation, propose questions to the candidate, and make sure these meetings provide the kind of information you need to make an informed choice in the upcoming November election for D.C. City Council at Large. These town hall meetings are designed to give you, the voter, the opportunity to call in and have your concerns addressed by the candidate, your questions answered, and your voice heard on the issues that are most important to you and to our city. We hope you will join in the discussion by calling in at 888-429-5471, or you can Skype your questions to BBS Radio 2. Esperamos que se ayudarán en la discusión llamando a 888-429-5471 y puede Skype sus preguntas a BBS Radio 2. Dos. Each town hall meeting will be conducted on this internet platform for an hour on the next three consecutive Sundays at 2 p.m. They will each deal with a different topic, and the final one will be on Sunday, October 19th, and will be an open forum. Today's discussion will focus on affordable and sustainable growth in the district. I would like to point out, however, that you are always free to ask a question on whatever issue is most important to you. I will take as many questions as possible, and I reserve the right to limit the time to ask or answer any one question. Let me point out that any question that remains unanswered at the end of the meeting can be submitted to his website, www.michaeldbrown2014.com. Now, let me introduce the candidate, Michael D. Brown, for an opening statement. Good afternoon, Mr. Brown. I look forward to an interesting and lively discussion today.
Thank you, Kathleen. Thanks for hosting this thing, because I think it's important that we let voters know exactly what I feel about the issues and answer their questions. It's more important that we hear what they want to know about than what I want to say. And so that's certainly the objective here. And as you know, there are 15 candidates in this race. So when we have public forums, it's hard to get more than a question or two. So the idea here is that we'll allow people to call in and ask the things that are important to them. And thank you for facilitating it.
I was just going to say, I think this is a very innovative idea that you're doing. You are the first to be doing this internet town hall meetings among all the other candidates. And so to me, it just reflects what a good, not only a good candidate you are, but what a good DC at large city councilman you will be, because you are outside of the box. You are thinking of how to bring people in a way which hasn't been done before. So hats off to you.
Thank you. And I think that's important. I think we need more of that in the district. We're not as inclusive as we should be. I'd like to start out with an opening statement. The District of Columbia is growing rapidly. More than 1,200 people are moving in every month, and our population is rapidly approaching 650,000 residents. Unfortunately, many of these new residents, who we call millennials, are moving in when they are in their 20s and 30s and moving out when they're in their 30s and 40s. We attract them, but then we cannot sustain them, and so our community suffers. Just when these people are hitting their stride, making good money, paying taxes, raising children that could come to our schools, we lose them to Montgomery, Fairfax, Arlington, and Prince George's County. Housing prices in the city continue to skyrocket, putting home ownership out of reach for many. In addition, a struggling school system and increasing crime in some areas is driving more people out of the city. To deal with these problems, we need a new kind of urban thinking, a new kind of planning. We need to take a comprehensive view of development in our city. Projects like the DC United Stadium project that will help bring jobs and help revitalize Buzzard Point, which is an underutilized section of the city, must be embraced and move forward. That type of development must also reach across the Anacostia River to neighborhoods in Ward 7 and 8. We need the kind of development along Martin Luther King Boulevard that we have had on U Street Northwest and H Street Northeast corridors of the city. Theaters, restaurants, shopping, venues that bring people from all over the city, not just neighborhood residents, need to be developed to reinvigorate these areas. It is not just a matter of bringing resources, but also bringing people across the river. We need more parks and green space for everyone in the city to enjoy and facilities to attract them. For example, McMillan Park Reservoir on North Capitol Street in Ward 5 needs to be redeveloped in a way that preserves the character of the green space and provides environmental resources for the community. Urban environments are like any other type of ecosystem. When one park dies, it affects the entire system. We need to actively pursue development that preserves our limited green space while best serving the communities. We have an affordable housing crisis in Washington, which is about to get dramatically worse. According to the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments, the district lost an astonishing 36,000 units of low-cost rental housing stock between 2000 and 2010. In the next 5 years, 45 multi-unit affordable housing buildings consisting of thousands of affordable housing units will be converted to market price housing because the time limit on their government subsidized loans will have expired. The D.C. government must intercede to subsidize rents for these units or provide new loan arrangements for landlords that may induce them to extend the covered period in an effort to avoid this crisis. We need to develop more affordable housing, finding an additional funding resource for the Housing Production Trust Fund, a special city-sponsored loan program for first home buyers with subsidized funding needs to be reinvented and expanded. Real estate tax sales and other property shouldn't be sold to predatory collection agencies, but rather offered to those who agree to live in homes for 10 years or more. Reasonable rent control needs to be enforced throughout the city, and public-private partnerships that include low-rent subsidized housing need to be expanded. In addition, we need to reduce the number of exemptions from inclusionary zoning laws. In recent years, restrictions have led to a pipeline that produced more than 26,000 housing units in the district without a single affordable unit. The loopholes in these laws must be closed. We also need to address our aging infrastructure with a rapidly aging metro system, a streetcar line that is half complete with funding that has been dramatically reduced, and a 25-year transportation plan that calls for billions in upgrades. Implementing this plan will take creative and holistic thinking. The streetcar line needs to be extended to Anacostia, not just finished on A Street. Until we see what happens, as some have proposed, we need to employ more new green technologies and create new partnerships with businesses that grow our community, not just Walmart, but all types of small businesses that make our community special and give it character, provide employment for residents, and reinvigorate our communities. It's time, D.C., to come up with a plan that works for all of us. A city divided between rich and poor, or young and old, or black and white will never be sustainable. It's time to come together as one great and vibrant community which stretches to all 8 wards of the city, embracing our new growth and using our additional resources to develop a new urban progressiveness that moves Washington, D.C. forward into the new millennium.
Well, thank you very much for that opening statement. You covered quite a few issues. And let me just ask you something that, you know, now having come back to D.C. and been driving around, that McMillan Park is something else. It's such a huge space. And what are some of the plans they're talking about? I mean, I've heard it's like building a shopping, like a Walmart or something, or a grocery store there?
They're talking, there's been all sorts of plans discussed. One of them is to open a grocery store there. I think that that's needed in that neighborhood, and they've talked about it. But there's so little green space available left in Washington. You know, and green space is not something that's easily replaced. It's almost impossible to replace once it's gone. So, you know, my feeling is that McMillan should be developed into a green space facility, that it should be kept as green space. And, you know, we shouldn't just plow it over and put up condos or more buildings or anything like that. I think that we need to develop it more. And so there's a group called Friends of McMillan Park that has some interesting ideas on what to do with the space. And I think that we need to investigate it carefully and make sure that we do what's best for the community. And I think what's best for the community is to keep it as green space.
That's great. And it has tunnels underneath it, right, that were, like, I guess, part of where they had – was it an arsenal originally or
– No, it was a water filtration plant.
A water filtration plant, okay.
Yeah, it was it was a water filtration plant. It was a sand filtration plant. It lasted for about 85 years, I think. They used it to filter water before it went into the reservoir system. You know, it's a strange thing in the District of Columbia. This is probably the only place in the world where this is true, but the Army Corps of Engineers ran the water system until just recently. So,
We have, excuse me, Mr. Brown, we have Lauren on line one. Lauren, are you there?
I am. Thank you.
Hey, Lauren. Thanks for calling in. What's your question?
Well, I'm a resident of Ward 5, and I was actually concerned about the redevelopment of McMillan Park. As you guys said earlier, there are a bunch of different groups trying to develop the land by putting in, like, shopping centers or condos and some others that are trying to preserve it as a green space. I was just wondering what we could do as a community to keep it as a green space, because it's important to a lot of us, and wondering what you think might happen.
Well, that's a great question, and it's right on time, because Kathleen and I were just talking about it. So I would think one thing that the community needs to do is they need to continue to organize and put pressure on the city council to do a study. You know, there's a Friends of McMillan Park, as we were saying, and there you can reach out to them. They have an internet, they have a website that you can go to. I don't know the address off the top of my head, but you can get involved with them. And I think the community needs to continue to put pressure on the city council to maintain the green space. And I think we need to do a study. I think we need to do a comprehensive study and put out different options that we can use. You know, there certainly are different ways we could develop this land. And there probably is a shopping center that needs to be created in the area, but we don't need to do it on the only available green space. One thing that I find particularly interesting about McMillan is that it has 24 acres of underground space. So you can put something under it and still keep all the green space on top. And now, I don't know enough about the architectural design. For years, they gave tours. They just stopped giving tours of the facility a few years ago. So obviously, people can go down there and walk around. And 24 acres, maybe you could put in a permanent farmer's market there and kill two birds with one stone. Put something really attractive that would bring people into the neighborhood, something unique, like you may be familiar with Union Market, which was the old wholesale market, which they've now redone. Something like that that could actually be an attraction and keep the green space. It's part of a larger piece of land called McMillan Park with the treatment facility is, which has a big lake and a lot of other amenities. So I think there's some interesting things that could be done with it. maybe a farmer's market, maybe other things in that 24 acres of underground green space. Underground space, while maintaining the green space. And, you know, it was originally put together by a commission that set out to create a comprehensive plan to preserve park space in the city. So I think that we need to preserve it as green space and park space. And I think we need to look carefully at the way we can develop the underground facility and maybe get people other things in the bargain. I think it'd be well worth investigating. I think the city should, along with the community, launch a study to find out, develop three or four different options.
And of course, you know, I'm always a believer in people calling their city council. I'm a believer in people calling and making, you know, hey, listen, you need to have a meeting. You need to invite us all to the table, and we need to come up with a good plan. And that's, you know, just something that, that can be done. Thank you very much, Lauren, for calling in.
Thank you.
You know what? I would also point out that in the District of Columbia, we have this very great system of community involvement called ANCs, Advisory Neighborhood Commissions. And I was an ANC commissioner. And that gives people another opportunity to organize, if Lauren is still out there listening, get in touch with your ANC, your local ANC, and you can go online and find out, given your neighborhood, what your ANC commission is, and get in touch with the North Michigan Park or whatever ANC is responsible for that area, and start to organize around the ANCs and use the ANCs to reach out to the city council.
That's a great idea. Again, the number to call in to ask your question is 888-429-5471, or you can Skype your question to BBS Radio 2. And we do have a question that was Skyped in from Leah. She says, I know you're talking about sustainable growth, but I'm not exactly sure I get what you mean. Are you talking about green growth or what? I'm confused.
Well, we are. I mean, certainly part of that's a good question, Leah. Thank you. We're part of what we're talking about is green growth, you know, as in the McMillan Park case, we're talking about green growth. And I'm certainly a strong supporter of green growth. But I think we're talking about more than that. I think we're talking about growth that's sustainable. One thing that comes to mind, not just a good plan, but a good plan that we can carry out to its, you know, total fruition, to the very end of the plan, so that we're sure that it makes the community better. One thing that comes to mind is the NCI, the New Communities Initiative. This was an idea to provide affordable housing. And affordable housing is something that's a real crisis in the city. And we'll talk more about it, I guess, as this town hall meeting goes on, because it's really part of the whole discussion. But the New Communities Initiative sought to do several things. It sought to replace dilapidated housing in four areas of the city. It sought to make sure that the new housing was available before the old housing was taken out. It was meant to increase the housing stock. They've just finished the first phase of this housing in Northeast. They've opened up a new building, but unfortunately, there was just recently a study by the city that says it was too ambitious a plan and underfunded. And underfunding is a real problem. You know, it's one of the problems that we have on the city council, I think, is that we pander too much. We go out there and we say what people want to hear. I think we need to be more, you know, introspective and more and do better planning for the long run, so that we're just not throwing stuff out there that we hope makes people temporarily happy. We are actually putting together a plan for growth that makes the city better over the long run and can be sustained. Besides the NCI, another thing that comes to mind is the streetcar line. You know, it's been pending for a long time, and we just cut funding for it. You know, it seems to me that it's something we really need, but it wasn't well thought out enough. So when I talk about affordable, sustainable growth, that's what I mean, as well as green growth, as well as affordable housing, as well as keeping elders in place, you know, allowing them to age in place, as well as slowing down the gentrification of neighborhoods. I talk about things that we can do, we can afford to do, and that we can keep on doing to make the city a better place to live. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, thank you very much, Leah, for writing that in. I wanted to ask you a question. You know, after being gone from D.C. for quite a while, coming back and seeing the, you know, just it's just amazing the growth. Do they ever do a study to see the impact? Like, for instance, I was looking at a neighborhood that obviously had row houses, and they've torn those down and built these apartment buildings that were maybe that block supported maybe 20 families. Now you're probably looking at maybe 100 apartments or more. And then the impact that those people are going to have on, you know, the local neighborhood and the parking and, you know, the use of services. I mean, do they ever look at that? Because some of these areas in D.C., I mean, I'm just shocked at the amount of apartment buildings that have, you know, taken over what I remember as being these little row houses.
Well, they do look at that, and there are plans, and the ANC commissions are supposed to be involved, and the, you know, in the and DCRA and other agencies are involved in new construction and issuing permits. We have several problems, though. One problem that we have is that we have different planning organizations in different areas. So Montgomery County, for example, if you're on the border of Montgomery County, we have rapid development around metro stations. That's one of the priorities that they have in Montgomery County. But if you live on one of the dividing lines near Montgomery County, for example, where I live in Upper Northwest along Western Avenue, they've approved all sorts of development. There's a facility, Geico Insurance. You may be familiar with it, and it's right over the Maryland line, and it's gigantic, and they want to put in literally thousands of housing units. It's been approved for that, and retail and office buildings, but there's no plan to upgrade the roads. The roads are in the District of Columbia that all abut this property. So all we have control over, actually, in the district is the curb cuts that would affect that project, and that's not much control. So that's one little problem we have. Another problem we have is developers seem to get over on the district a lot. When you put in a multi-housing unit, for example, or a retail unit, or a retail development, or an office building, you're supposed to provide so many parking spaces. Well, they get around that a lot. I know that they did a building when I was an ANC commissioner, and they said that every unit would have a half a parking space. Every unit in the building would have a half a parking space. Now, I've never known anybody that owned half a car.
Unless you can have those smart cars.
Yeah. Well, maybe today. Yeah, it came to. This is 20 years ago before they had that. Right. But, and we argued, the neighborhood argued, what do you mean half a parking space? And they said, well, not everybody's going to have a parking, you know, a car. Right. So we think one out of every two apartments in the building, condos in the building, are going to have a car. Well, I mean, you don't know Washington if you think that's true, because this wasn't near a metro stop. It was in the middle of a neighborhood, and more than half the people in the District of Columbia owned cars, or did back then. That's changing rapidly. But But back then, they certainly did. We were able to block that development until they put in more parking spaces because it was an area in which American University was also in the area, and there was a lot of retail. And so the spaces were, you know, on-street parking was already a problem. And there are problems with that in many neighborhoods, and many neighborhoods have put in restricted parking. I don't know if you've ever noticed, besides the two-hour normal restriction, if you're down around the stadiums, if you're down around national stadiums, there's restricted national stadium, for example, there's restricted parking for neighbors only on game days, and you know, they put in other things like that to help, but neighbors have to put pressure on the city to do that, and sometimes they don't do a very good job at it. So we need more of that sort of thing. We also, I'll give you one more example. When they put in a shopping center in the area, we required the people that wanted to put in the shopping center wanted to give 30 minutes of free parking. We said that's ridiculous. Who shops in 30 minutes? By the time you park your car, get the kids out and go into the store. So we put pressure on them before they got their permits, and we made them provide 2 hours of free parking. And that way, people are off the street.
That sounds great. We do have a caller. Colleen, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Hello, Colleen.
Hello, everybody.
Hi.
How are you?
Colleen, thanks for calling in.
Well, you're welcome. I have a question for you.
Uh-huh.
I heard you say in your opening statement that we have lost about 36,000 units of affordable housing.
Yeah.
And I have a friend who's looking to move back to D.C. She lived here a long time ago, and she wants to move back now from Arizona. And I've been trying to help her find a place to live. So I've been looking around at their both, you know, for sale, but mostly for rent units that could accommodate her and her family. And I can't seem to find an apartment anywhere in northwest part of town with two bedrooms that's less than $3,000 a month. Can you talk about why the rents have gotten so high, and is there anything that we can do about it at this point?
Well, yeah, that's a real problem. And I've got to tell you, Colleen, it's an amazing thing as far as I'm concerned, because my wife and I live in a house in Northwest, and our mortgage payment is less than $750 a month. The house has been assessed at more than $900,000, so we probably couldn't afford to buy it today, but that's the difference in price from when we bought it 23 years ago till today, and good for us, you know, we'll be able to retire to Miami any day now, because I'm getting older and older, and you know, we'll get a good price for the house, but it's bad for our city, because if we become a city of just rich people and poor people, we'll never be able to sustain ourselves, and rents are just ridiculously high. I remember the first apartment that I rented in the city on Capitol Hill. I rented a great apartment, and it cost me $450 a month. I'm sure that same apartment is, you know, somewhere above $2,000 a month. And part of the problem, of course, is it's a matter of supply and demand. We have 1,200 new people moving in every month, and that's helping us. We're expanding the tax base. We've just, and I think this was ill-advised, but we've just given back $500 million to taxpayers who make up to $1 million a year. And I think that's crazy. I think we need to use that money to do several things. And one of the things we need to do is we need to provide more affordable housing. We need to extend rent control. And we need to do some specific things to make it affordable to live in the city. As I said, more affordable. As I said, when in my opening statement, we get all these millennials moving in their 20s, and then they move out in their 30s when they really are paying higher taxes because they're making more money. They're having children that we can put into our school system, which is in some areas lacking for students. And it's a silly to let this happen. So some of the things I think we could do, just to be specific about your question, is that we can change some of the rent control laws that we have in the city. We have some strong rent control laws, but some of it needs to be changed. And one of the things we need to change is we need to change the exemptions from rent control. You can be exempted from rent control if your apartment or your multi-housing unit or your house was built after 1975. Now, that's 50 years ago. How many apartments have been built in the city in the last 50 years? We need to change that. We need to make it, we need to tighten it up so that some of the housing stock that was built after 1975 is included in rent control. We need to extend subsidies for people, for young people, for people with disabilities, for older people. There are some exceptions made for 62-year-olds, people over 62, but we need to extend those. You know that if you live in the district, for example, and you own a house and you live in it, you get the homestead exemption. But there's no similar exemption for renters. Now, the homeowner's exemption applies to property taxes. But I think that we should find a way to extend it to landlords and allow them to have exemptions if they provide more affordable housing. And there's several programs that do that, but unfortunately, there's also a lot of exclusionary zoning loopholes. For example, if you have less than 10 units or you have a historic building, there's a lot of ways to get around the law, and I think we need to tighten those things up. We need to give people that rent at a reasonable rate a bigger break. We've got 45 multi-unit apartment complexes that are almost at the end of their 15-year government-subsidized loans. And all those housing units, thousands of housing units, will be going up to market rent in the next couple of years. I think we need to extend those loans to landlords if they're willing to accept them. We don't, you know, there's no way to force them to accept them, but maybe we can make it attractive enough, give them attractive enough loan packages that they'll extend their affordable housing options to people. And if not, I think we need to subsidize those people that live in those units so that they don't have this sticker shock where they go from $500 a month or $800 a month up to $2,000 a month. I think we need to think of also creative solutions to the housing problem problem in the city. For example, we sell tax properties that are delinquent on their taxes. We sell them to these predatory lenders that then pile tons of fees on top of them. You know, there was a terrible story a few years ago about a veteran who lost his house, lost all the equity in his house because it was sold in a tax sale for a few thousand dollars. And the people went out and sold it for, I don't know how much, well over $100,000, over $200,000, I think. And the man became homeless and lost all the equity in his house. We need to intervene in that. In those situations, there's no reason why the city can't be the lender of last resorts in those situations and save these properties. And if they can't be saved, they should be offered to people that are willing to homestead them, that are willing to live there for 10 years, get a small interest on their investment in case they have to move out in less than 10 years and are forced to sell them back to the city. So I think we need to be creative in that sense of finding solutions. And lastly, I don't know why we don't do more public-private partnerships with the public. You know, I mean, I guess that would be a public-public, you know, public-public partnership. But, you know, we're always offering to contractors if they take a building. I remember in our neighborhood, we talked about this with the library and with the school. And if they offer some amenities, we allow them to develop some of the property privately. I don't know why we don't do that with individuals for the same on the same basis. For example, when we built the National Stadium, we paid a ton of money to build that stadium. Tens of millions of dollars. I think, I can't remember the figure right off the top of my head, but it was some astronomical fee. And it was done on the basis that it would make the neighborhood better, and it would, we would receive lots of tax revenue from ticket sales and from concession sales and parking and all these other things. And you know what? That's come to fruition. I don't know if we've made our money back on the stadium yet, but that neighborhood is a fabulous neighborhood, and a lot of it had to do with the stadium. So why can't we do that with individuals? Why don't we understand that home ownership makes all the difference in the area, and the more homeowners we put into depressed areas that need help, the better the neighborhood would be, the more taxes we'll get, the less crime we'll have, because if you want people to act responsibly and be part of the system, you have to vest them somehow. So I think we have to do all these things to make the affordable housing stock better in the District of Columbia, because we really can't mess with the market. If you can rent a place out for $3,000, these people are in business, and that's what they're going to do.
That's correct. Colleen, did that answer your question?
Yes, and then some. Thank you very much.
All right, Colleen. Thanks for calling in. Sorry to talk so much.
There's never a shortage of words by you, Mr. Brown, and I find that's definitely a strong point of view that you have, because you're great at expressing
ideas. My wife and kids might argue with that.
Here's a question that was Skyped in by Malcolm. Okay, let me read this here. It says, what do you think about the new streetcar line? I heard they cut all the funding. Is it actually going to happen? I see the tracks and stations and all sorts of things, but this has been going on for years on H Street, and still no cars are running on the line. I'm thinking it was just another waste of money, and nothing is going to come of it.
Well, I mean, that's just an excellent question, and you know, it's another thing I mentioned in my opening statement, that we have to, it's one thing to come up with these ideas, but then we have to be able to sustain them, and there really were a lot of missteps with the streetcar line, Malcolm, but I think it's finally going to take off. We should see it running very, very shortly, and there's an upside and a downside to it. The upside is that it's great green technology, and we need to encourage that. It's also, it's much more fuel efficient, for example, than a regular bus. It'll get cars off the street. It's a great idea to have in a corridor like 8th Street because you know that it extends. It makes the business environment more vibrant. We've seen what streetcars, for example, have done in New Orleans and San Francisco. They've been a big boon to business. So that's a great idea, I think. And we need to extend it. We've started it in Anacostia. It needs to be completed in Anacostia. And I think it'll have a positive impact over there as well. But the downside is that we didn't, we seriously cut funding. That's actually happened. More than $100 million have been cut from the long-run funding for the plan because of the missteps and because of the fact that it's taken so long to get it up and running, that the council recently, in an effort to be able to pay again, I think, for this big tax cut of $500 million, decided to take $100 million of it out of the streetcar line. And I don't know that that's the right thing to do. I think that we need to keep the money in there and we need to keep going. But we need to think about these things when we plan them. They need to be better planned. And I think, again, it reflects on a city council that panders more than it plans. And we need less pandering, more planning. So I'm for the streetcar. I think it's going forward, Malcolm. I think you'll see it if you live around 8th Street. You'll be riding it no time at all. And I just think that we need to, as we carry the plan forth, plan better and make sure that we follow through on what's going on in Anacostia. Because we need that kind of development in Anacostia. You know, we can't just develop St. Elizabeth's. We need a lot of different types of development that bring people from all over the city.
Well, let me ask this question. excuse me. How long is the streetcar? Does it go for 10 blocks or 2 miles or what?
Well, I think it's been planned to go, you know, there was an initial plan to have it go many places in the city and connect so that it would be a long system. I can't remember 15, 20 miles across the city. Wow. But right now, I think it goes just a few miles down 8th Street is the completed section. I'm guessing that we're talking about less than 5 miles, maybe 3 miles down 8th Street. And there's rails that are put in Anacostia, but that's all. The rest of it hasn't been completed in Anacostia. So ultimately, we hope it'll cover the whole city. And, you know, we used to have a pretty good trolley system. Went all through Georgetown and Upper Northwest and went all across the city. So all eight wards, I think, had trolleys at one time. You know, when I'm for putting in a streetcar, you know, it must be a good idea because I've for 50 years ridden a motorcycle and as a hobby. And streetcar lines are the nemesis of motorcycles. If you get caught on the little tracks, it's hard to get out of it. But I still think it's a great idea.
We have a caller on line one. Louise, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
What's your question,
Are you there?
Louise? Yes.
We're here.
Question. pardon me?
We're here, Louise.
We're here.
Thanks for calling in.
Oh, you're welcome. Listen, there is a rumor that there's going to be a building project on – I live on Capitol Hill, and it's regarding rebuilding the Virginia Street Tunnel that has rail traffic going underneath the Potomac. And my concern is that – nobody's paying attention to it, and that it will cause horrible traffic problems on Capitol Hill, where we, you know, many of the streets were shut down after 9/11, and it's just almost impossible to get around. Is there anything that the city council can do to affect that in some way?
Oh, yeah. One thing, first of all, Louise, is that this is something that's getting a lot of attention because it's a gigantic project. And I think what you're talking about is the Virginia Avenue Tunnel, and it's used by CXX to do, you know, for rail traffic through the city. And the problem there is that it's well over 100 years old and out of date, and the railroad really has to replace it. It really has to be replaced. They want to replace it with two tunnels, with a double tunnel, so it will increase the capacity tremendously. And they want to use something called intermodal double stack rail cars so that they can, I guess this is the latest rail technology. And again, you know, rail is a very green technology. You can move a lot more by rail than you can by truck. It's less of a polluter, and it's also been a bottleneck in our area for a long time, so they have to do it. But there are some serious concerns with the neighborhood. And one of them is a concern about safety, because they put stuff through this tunnel. And you know, if you live on Capitol Hill, Louise, that it's very, very close to, it goes right to a residential neighborhood. And there was an oil fire a couple of years ago. And so that's one of the, they transport oil and other stuff through it. And that's one of the problems. It's a safety problem. Now, CSX says that they have no intention of increasing hazardous materials or crude oil shipments through the tunnel, and that they're very, very rare. But I think that one thing we have to do is we have to renew a voluntary agreement that was made years ago, and we have to prohibit the transport of those materials through that tunnel. So that's one thing. It's right, I mean, it's within blocks of Tyler Elementary School, and there's a private school, Capitol Hill Day School, which is right there. So we need to protect the neighbors in that sense. We also, there's been a final environmental impact statement produced, and they've talked about the problems with traffic in the neighborhood and what they're going to do. But unfortunately, they haven't talked about the number of trucks that I can see, how many trips they're going to make a day. This project is going to take more than 3 years to complete. So I think we need to get a few more assurances from CSX about what the exact impact on the neighborhood is going to be. And that's my second concern. And then I have a final concern, and that is how it's going to impact the neighborhood in the long term. If you're going to put in two tunnels and you're going to double the capacity of each rail car, it seems to me that you're going to increase the traffic by 400%, or the load by 400%. And I want to know what potential damage this is going to do to properties and what data they have to support. CSX says it's not going to be any problem at all because they have new technology that will mitigate the damage. But they've capped the amount of money that you could get for damage to your house at $75,000. I don't know why that is. I don't think there should be a cap on it. I think if they do $100,000 damage to your property, and there's been a panel put together that will inspect the property before and after, I think if they determine whatever the damage is, I think they should be liable for it. One thing that we have to remember about the tunnel is that it's costing them, I think, between $300 and $400 million to do the project. But the alternative is to reroute traffic through Maryland and Virginia, and that would cost them up to $5 billion. So they're saving a boatload of money by running it, by rehabbing the tunnel that already exists there. And I think that they're being a little frugal in their response to the concerns of the neighborhood, and that they need to give a few more assurances to the neighborhood. And I think they need to offer a few more amenities to the neighborhood. They've offered several million dollars in amenities, but I really don't think it's enough. And I think they need to do more to protect the neighborhood. There's going to be a 300-yard open trench, basically, that these trains are going through during construction. We need to make sure it's not going to be a problem. And that's the bad news. But the good news is this, Louise, that the city council has decided to they went out and they initiated their own study. So they have a private study which is about to report on many of these issues. And I think we all need to pay attention, especially you guys that live on Capitol Hill. I used to live on Capitol Hill, not far from here. I think you need to pay attention to what's going on as far as the VAT goes. I just testified at a hearing on August 26th on this very issue. But there'll be another hearing coming up in October after the final study's done. So I think we need to get as much community input into that hearing. And I think if we're sure, if we get more assurances from CSX and they put together a little larger fund to make sure that everybody's protected and they answer some of the traffic questions, that we need to go ahead with this. Because the tunnel's well over 100 years old and has to be replaced and is a real bottleneck. Oh, and one other thing that may be a concern that they really haven't clearly answered, as far as I'm concerned, in the final environmental impact study, is what this could do to other rail traffic. Even though it's commercial traffic that rides on these rails through this tunnel, we have the potential of the railroad bridge, I don't know if you're familiar with it, that runs across the Potomac being backed up, and it could affect Amtrak and VRE and other rail traffic. So we need to take a careful look at that, too, for commuters.
Louise, did that answer your question, or do you have a follow-up question to ask?
What will it do to... How will it affect our properties with what our properties are worth on the market? I mean, having a big construction project like that, will it affect what our properties are worth?
Well, you know, I think that you need to – that's one of the reasons – I mean, that's an excellent question, and I think that that's one of the reasons that the fund needs to be larger because, if you're trying to sell it in the three-year period where they're building the tunnel – rebuilding the tunnel, it may well affect your property value. Now, hopefully, when the project is complete, it won't have a long-term effect on your property. But we don't know that, do we? We don't know how noisy it's going to be or you know, what the additional load is going to be, how that's going to affect your property value. But certainly, I would think that if you're living, there's an area which they've sketched out, and I don't know if you're in that area, but you can look online, and it will show you. There's a map of Capitol Hill. And if you're in that, what they're referring to, I think, is the impacted area, and you're going to sell your house, it could dramatically affect your retail. The value of your house on the retail housing market if you're doing it in the 3 years. So I think we need to make sure that there's enough money there to compensate you if that happens.
I do.
Thank
too.
You very much, Louise.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you.
Here I do have another question. We're getting pretty close to going off the air, but let's answer this question that was Skyped in by Mercedes. What about development east of the river? Everybody talks about it, but it is slow in coming. I see the stuff at St. E's, but not anything else. They have been talking about Skyline for years. It's closed, but where is the new center? Feels like the same old in Anacostia.
Well, I mean... I certainly understand that feeling, Mercedes. The good news about Skyline is that I went to something with the mayor just yesterday, and they're going to break ground on it this week. So finally, that's a project that's been long overdue in a neighborhood that needs real development and real retail development. And so that's going to happen, and that's going to happen soon, and that's the good news there. The bad news is this. We also went to a rally last week. There's a law that's been passed where $1 billion was supposed to be handed off to small businesses. And to date, less than $100 million has been given to those businesses. So people were there asking, where's the $1 billion? Where's the other $900 million? And we really need to follow the law, and we need to make sure that this money gets to small businesses. Because, you know, it's small businesses that provide jobs. And in a couple of weeks, we'll be talking about jobs on our at our town hall meeting. But it's small businesses that provide jobs. It's small businesses that pay taxes in the District of Columbia and make our neighborhoods what they are. I ran a small business for 25 years in the district, and I made my money in the district. I spent my money in the district. I hired people that lived in the district. I paid taxes in the district. So we need to make sure that that money goes to small businesses. And a lot of those small businesses need to be in Anacostia. Now, the St. East project is, I think, the biggest government project that's on done anywhere in the United States today. So that's going to be a big development project over there. But we need more than that. We need the kind of development in Anacostia, I believe, that you had along the H Street corridor and the U Street corridor. We need restaurants. We need entertainment venues. We need the kind of things that bring the people from west of the river over to east of the river, because it's not just about putting resources into Anacostia. It's about bringing the city together and bringing people over there. I mean, my wife and I, we live in Northwest on the edge of the city, but we go down to U Street sometimes, and we go over to H Street to eat in restaurants, and my kids dance at a place on H Street. A dance studio over there. And, you know, we need this kind of development in Anacostia so that we bring the people from west of the river over the east of the river. And let me tell you something. I spend a lot of time in Anacostia. The people of Anacostia are wonderful people. They're very warm. They have a great sense of community. And we need to not just provide them with services, which they lack, but we need to get people from all over the city going all over the city. We're only 10 miles square. And, you know, if you look at a city like New York, you have people that travel all over the city for different venues and for different in the restaurant district, the theater district, et cetera, et cetera. And we need to do the same thing in Anacostia. We need to make it vibrant so it attracts people and not just business.
Okay, well, that's a great answer, and it's so true. And look, we are running out of time, so I'm going to let Mr. Brown make some closing remarks. And remember, you get to vote for two, so consider carefully both of your choices. And then once you finish with your closing remarks, I'll sum up what's going to be happening next week. So go ahead, Mr. Brown, your closing remarks.
All right. Thank you so much. You know, I want to thank everybody who's out there listening and just say that my campaign came up with the idea of doing these meetings so that you could hear what we really think and so that we could hear what you really think, because that's what's important. What's important is knowing what people in the community feel and what their needs are, because that's our responsibility as government. In government, we need to serve the people, and that's what the whole idea should be. And unfortunately, on our city council, we haven't had enough of that. You know, we have people on the city council who make $240,000 a year working for city contractors on the side. That should be, we need to end that. If you're a city councilman or a city council person, that should be a full-time job. If $130,000 a year isn't enough for you, go do something else for a living. If you want to serve the people, you should serve the people. We need to stop reviewing contracts. That should be left up to bureaucrats. We need to beef up agencies like BEGA and the Office of Campaign Finance to keep an eye on things. And we need to plan for affordable, sustainable growth. If our city becomes a city of rich and poor, or a city of young and old, or a city of black and white divided on the issues, we will never be able to sustain it. So we need to come together as a city and work together. We need an honest government that cares about the people. And I hope that on November 4th, you will come out and vote for Michael D. Brown, a leader and someone who's out to make a change in the District of Columbia. I'm number one on the ballot, and I feel like I'm your first choice for a better D.C. So thank you for listening. I hope you'll tune in next week when we do our next town hall meeting. Thanks.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Brown, and thanks for joining us. Please tune in next week on the same channel at the same time, 2 p.m., for our discussion on jobs and a living wage. This town hall meeting will be archived on our campaign website, and I encourage you to share it with others who are interested in the upcoming election. Remember that you can submit questions to the campaign website for this meeting or the upcoming town hall meetings next week, and we will do our best to answer as many as possible. Again, that address is www.michaeldbrown2014.com. I'd like to read this disclaimer. This program is paid for by Michael D. Brown for Council 2014, Patricia E. Brown, Treasurer, 4501 Western Avenue Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20016. A copy of our report is on file with the Director of the Office of Campaign Finance for the District of Columbia. This program was produced by BBS Radio, all rights reserved. Again, this is Kathleen Gomez saying thank you, and I hope you will tune in again next week and become informed. And remember, you can vote for two for City Council at Large. Thank you.